come to order.
The Senate Finance and Revenue Committee will come to order.
Thank you very much. And this morning, we are privileged to hear from the Office of Economic Analysis about the quarterly economic revenue forecast for March 2008.
Finalizing our story.
Coming back from that room, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Okay. All right. The documents for the forecast are being distributed now.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the House and the Senate committees. For the record, my name is Tom Pitowski. I'm with the Office of Economic Analysis. And with me today is Michael Kennedy, a senior economist with the Office of Economic Analysis. And today we are providing you with our quarterly update, which has been accelerated a little bit. We would normally do this at the end of February, but our March forecast has been speeded up for you for the legislative session that you're now engaged in. So, how are we doing? We're up. Okay, with that, let me just start in to give you just a quick little background. As you can see from this slide, I think it's important for the committees to reorient themselves to the fact that we have quite a bit of review that goes into these forecasts. We start off on the top here with the U.S. economic history and a forecast from Global Insight. And I want to emphasize that today because I'm going to come back to mention that this forecasting service that we use and we use in our modeling has made a significant change in their position on how the U.S. economy is operating, and that also influences our forecast for Oregon. But we do that with our economic modeling. We meet with the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors. This is a group of 12 individuals, mostly from private sector, that have expertise in various areas of the economy and sort of have their pulse on the main street of what's happening in the Oregon economy. We then meet once again with the Council after a preliminary forecast. We also have a DAS advisory group, which is all the groups that we meet with that provide us with data. Various state agencies are involved. And then finally, as those models work through, we work through our tax models, and then we meet with our Council of Revenue Forecast Advisors, various CPA people at both firms and at individual consulting areas that are on top of what's happening with tax laws and what they're saying about their own constituencies in terms of their tax filings. And then finally, we add in our legislative policy changes that we work in concert with the Legislative Revenue Office, and then finally, the kind of report that you're seeing today. So I want to start just with a little bit about the state of the U.S. economy. Like it or not, we like to think of ourselves as real independent thinkers here in Oregon, but generally the way the U.S. economy goes, that's how the Oregon economy also follows. Housing and energy are really the two items that are sort of driving the slowdown in the economy right now. Households are also slowing their spending. If you saw reports today in the Wall Street Journal, credit card delinquencies are starting to rise quite dramatically. Chain store sales have one of their lowest January's on record for the past 5 years. So the consumer is being constrained here by definitely energy prices that are higher, and also basically they're not able to use their homes like ATM machines as they did before. That sort of a source of cash has been slowing up. With that, you know, there's also, I don't have it listed here, but the financial sector is also feeling a little bit of pain. Definitely the subprime mortgages, the securitized forms of investments are really starting to feel some pain, and the worry here is that this can spill over beyond just mortgage areas into various credit availability for regular consumers and small businesses. January jobs in the U.S. were down and that's the first decline since August of 2003. With these major indicators also pointing downwards, the main one at the moment was the Institute of Supply Management service sector, and service sectors somewhere the order of two-thirds to three-quarters of the economy. That took quite a plunge and is in an area that's signifying contraction. All these things taken together has caused the forecasting firm that we use, Global Insight, to change, and they did this on Wednesday of this week, 2 days ago, to now include a recession scenario into their baseline forecast. And it is their baseline forecast that we use for our purposes. Next. Now, this is just a quick look at their February baseline. And I want to remind you, we use the January baseline for our economic model. And there just was not time to go back and rerun things with this new information. But we did take this information into account in our delivery today, but also into the delivery that Michael Kennedy will do on the revenue front. So the point I want to point out here is that they have their view is a fairly shallow recession to happen in the first half of 2008 and then some mild growth going forward. So if there's a good news to the bad news, this is basically it. But also you can see that they have a forecast for oil prices based on the barrel price of oil to also go down. Housing starts to finally start to come back in 2009. And then interest rates, basically because of the slowing of the economy, also starting to drop. These are necessary aspects to sort of reset the economy so that it can get into a better environment to once again grow. Our March 2008 forecast comparisons, notice that I have put up here, does not assume a U.S. recession. So this is our baseline. And by the way, we've always had in our economic forecast a slowing of the economy into 2008. And this has also flowed into our revenue forecast. So here is just an indication of incrementally now down further. Based on the information we've received from the forecasting firm Global Insight. So probably as we would go forward, we're probably looking somewhat closer to the pessimistic viewpoint here rather than the baseline. Now, also I want to say in my statements to make this perfectly clear, our office is not saying that Oregon will be in recession. Now, that is not in our forecast. But even slower growth than what we had is probably what we're going to be seeing and working with as we come up to our next forecast. Of course, that, once again, is a forecast. So we expect slowing in terms of personal income, slowing in terms of employment. But once again, even with Global Insight, with that short view of a shallow recession, there should be some growth in the second half of 2008, milder growth than traditional in 2009 going forward. I wanted to show you sort of comparing when the U.S. has been in recession and what's happened with Oregon jobs at the same time. So the red here designates when the U.S. has been in recession, and that's overlaid the actual data that's happened to Oregon jobs. And as you can see, the 1991, here is the red is the recession. And Oregon, this is actually a fairly mild downturn for us. And you can see it's a rather a V-shaped. You're into it, and you come out fairly quickly. As opposed to the 2001, say 2003 recession, is a more of a W-shaped. It crosses a number of years. But also, the U.S. economy, and this is the official definition from the National Bureau of Economic Research, is only 8 months. But if we actually looked at in terms of even U.S. jobs, it was much longer than that sort of eight-month demarcation. But notice, when we're down, when the U.S. goes into recession, we have also been down on and in a slower growth. So we do move how the U.S. economy moves. Last two recessions, Oregon definitely fared better in the 90 to 91, much worse in the 2001. Here's some of the characteristics. The durations were the same as the official statistics are. But really, this 2001 was much longer. And almost, in a sense, comparable to what I have down for Oregon, which is the length of sort of job losses over time. So that this was only about 8 months in 1991, but it was over 31 months in the previous recession. As I said just previously, a V-shaped, short, deep, but over a lot. The W-shaped is also deep, but it takes a while to get out of it. Inflation was much higher back in 1991 compared to 2001, and the Oregon unemployment rate was much higher by a full percentage point. And it stayed above 7% for a much longer time than what was true back in the 1991. Now, I'm making these comparisons because I'm going to come back later to try to give you an argument that I think if the U.S. goes into recession, if we somehow would follow into it, I think we're going to see a situation that's going to be more like the 1991. Where we'll feel it a bit milder than what the U.S. will overall, instead of the opposite, which was we felt it much worse in 2003. No two recessions are alike. In both situations, the Federal Reserve was worried about inflation. It was generally coming from higher energy prices, definitely the oil side, and they were raising rates, and that's what caused the slowdown. Definitely the Federal Reserve was raising rates as we came into 2001. Investment was a nosedive. Manufacturing led decline. High tech was hit. Housing, though, did fairly well. Until, of course, the more recent times. Investment income decline. All these things had a horrible effect on us. I liken it as a dual recession in 2001. We had an old-fashioned recession where we lost jobs and so on, and then we had a financial recession in terms of the stock market, in terms of financial wealth. And that's what the double whammy hit us on our general fund tax revenues. In the 1991, housing was soft. We had much stronger population growth at that time, which helped to boost us up. And high tech did marginally okay. In fact, they actually added jobs during this period of time. Okay, Oregon's position now in this latest downturn that we're seeing. Nationwide foreclosures, they've increased 75% nationwide. Oregon has had a 12% increase. That's 43rd slowest in the U.S. In terms of our rate of foreclosures relative to population, we're at half a percentage point. That's much better than the places that are really starting to hurt through this housing downturn. Places like Nevada, Florida, California, Arizona, we're there at 1.5% rate. Oregon still has positive single-family house price appreciation, although we see little pockets. Medford has a very strong connection with California, and they're feeling the sort of same pains that California is. Bend is getting close to being in the negative area. But if we look at other parts, metropolitan areas in Oregon, still it's positive price appreciation. Housing correction, we have less to adjust compared to other high population growth areas. Essentially, heck, when you have urban growth boundaries and so on, it's tougher to really get housing starts to ramp up, like in places that don't have these sort of land type restrictions. And in some way, that was sort of a help for us. Thus, our corrections. Definitely housing starts are down, no doubt about it. I think the adjustment is not going to be as deep and heavy as a lot of other places in the country. Job growth in the fourth quarter, a fairly strong 2.5% at annual rate. And the unemployment rate was relatively unchanged. And then also the unemployment initial benefit claims, they are up 3,000. It's looking sort of similar to what we saw back in 2005. It does point to a further slowing involved for jobs going into 2008. This is a bubble diagram. And with this bubble diagram, maybe a little explanation here. This is fourth quarter jobs in Oregon by various sectors. The size of the bubble represents the proportion of jobs in that sector relative to total jobs. This is the positive sector, which means that here on the vertical axis, It's positive growth for the most recent quarter. Relative to the third quarter, we're regaining jobs. The horizontal part is year over year. Well, relative to a year ago, were jobs gaining or not? So if you're in this area, heck, year over year you've been gaining jobs. In the most recent quarter, you also gained jobs. So we sort of give this the title of expanding area here. And you can see that even as recently as the fourth quarter here, most of the bubbles are in this positive range. Now, housing market, how does it spread out to the economy? It hits construction, definitely. It hits finance, those people involved especially in mortgage originations, refinancing. It hits transportation services, definitely wood products. And you can see that that's sort of symptomatic here of this area where we have construction is down, and it's down mostly in the most recent quarter. Finance is down in the most recent quarter and year over year. This stands for transportation services, warehousing, and utilities. You can see electronics, though, is still positive in the most recent quarter. And then wood products, definitely down. It's been down basically since really as we got into 2006. So it's been having a very tough time. But you can see some of these other areas, metals and machinery, have had very strong time and still are doing quite well. And part of that is our export sector. The dollar value has gone down. It has started to help our exports do much better. And then retail trade, most recently down, but still positive year over year. And I think this is an indication both of the consumer spending slowing down overall, but also a concentration of your big box retailers that cater towards the housing market. This is our index of leading economic indicators. Through December, you can see the indicator had been coming down. It's into the negative range.
We don't have that.
You don't have this. I'm sorry. This is a new slide that we added. Apologize for that. One of those afterthoughts at midnight that you think, boy, I should have this in here. So the indication is that it has slowed down. But these periods where we had some very serious problems, and if we wanted to call recession in Oregon, we'd most likely call this recession, where the indicator has come down, and then the jobs is the other line that sort of follows it. Now, we have a little bit of a disconnect here. We've had a little jump up in jobs here while the indicator has come down, but we think this is more just the indication that, look, going forward, we believe that we're going to have slower growth in our Oregon economy. And we believe that this job growth here is going to be coming down as we get into 2008. That, by the way, was in our previous forecast. I'm sorry, not our previous, but the one for this one, even though we didn't have the U.S. recession scenario in that forecast. So I think that still remains the case, a slower growth going into 2008, possibly a little slower than what I just showed you. Then finally, going forward, assessment. Wood products is in terrible shape. They've been helped out a little bit by exports, but it's very, very depressed right now. And you can think about that. My argument here is that I think the Oregon economy is going to fare a little better through this downturn than the rest of the U.S. But the exposure to the rest of the U.S. is definitely the wood products to the overall housing market of the U.S. And they're definitely feeling the pain. Housing starts will continue to drop this year in Oregon. There's going to be a correction and pretty mild growth in 2009. House price appreciation may go negative for a couple of months here overall for the state, but I think the adjustment is going to be rather quick. Job losses are possible, but once again, I think given our position, it's going to look more like the 1990-91 recession rather than the deep drops we saw in the 2001 recession. And then we also have some strong stimulus coming forward. The Federal Reserve has definitely cut the rates, and those they call it a long and variable lag to when we finally start to see the positive effects from rate cuts from the Fed. And then the fiscal stimulus package was just passed this morning by Congress. It's headed to the President's desk for signature, and the checks are expected to go out at the end of May. And so these two things taken together should help to lessen the impact from the recession that's being forecasted for the U.S. economy. Now, Michael will have some statements possibly about the fiscal stimulus packages in terms of our tax revenues in Oregon. There are pluses and minuses associated with that stimulus package. But I can take some questions now on the Oregon economy, or we can move into Michael's presentation.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question coming in, and you've just touched on it, and that's the stimulus package. Oregon has, in a sense, done the same thing with the kicker quite recently. Does that, is that a measurable that weighs in here in your general optimism about the Oregon economy? And I guess as an economist, how do you measure this kind of stimulus package? You, as a taxpayer, you look at it kind of on an individual basis. How much did I get and what did I spend it on? But the purpose here is sort of a global or a large jolt to the economy. And what are the measurables in that? And how can you measure them in Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, that's an excellent question, which means I have to think about it a little bit. Really, you know, it's interesting because we almost have comparable sizes. You know, the kicker is about $1 billion, and Oregon's generally about, you know, 1%. And if we got about $100 billion at the U.S., that's about $1 billion here. So very comparable in size. A couple of key differences. The federal stimulus package is geared more towards lower income, whereas the kicker was actually, in essence, geared towards higher income, because it was the higher income taxpayers. And the belief among economists is that if you're going to have people spend, people generally at the lower income spectrum will spend more of this type of a rebate than people at the higher income end. Then the other difference, too, is that ours was Oregon-specific. So we have a lot more leakages out. You know, I get on the Internet, and I buy a flat-screen TV, and that had hardly any effect on Oregon. With the federal one, it's to the whole U.S. So to the extent that our companies also are dependent on demand throughout the U.S., that helps out our companies. So my expectation is the stimulus from the federal package will turn out to be greater than the short-term stimulus we had from the kicker. Now, if we had a sales tax, I could give you lots of data on spending and what the effects will be. But without that, it is kind of difficult to work through other types of information, tax payments by retailers and things like that to try to get some sense. But I think overall, that's would be my assessment of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, good presentation. I'm hearing sort of two things. Help me reconcile them. I'm hearing you say that every indicator that we have in Oregon, first of all, the larger recession scenario in the United States, but every indicator that we see in Oregon so far is slowing down, but and looking like it's pre-recession sort of slowdowns, yet you're saying you're not projecting a recession. My question is there any precedent in Oregon history, last 25, 30 years, however you want to look at it, where we've seen a whole bunch of slowing, and we've seen it now for a few months. We've seen it both on a national level and a state level that we haven't gone into a recession. I mean, have we seen everything slowing down? But hey, we came out of it. Is there any precedent for that? My recollection of history is every time we've seen this, we've actually ended up in a recession. By the time we know we're in a recession, I mean, by the time we actually have the economic data to prove it, we're already 6 or 8 months into it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Broome, possibly the when we had the Asian financial crisis at the end of the 90s. Although here, the difference here is that our indications in Oregon were that we were slowing down and possibly we could slide into something, however we call it, recession. The difference in that period, though, is the U.S. economy was still doing fairly well. And it was just our exposure on the Pacific Rim that was hitting us. So I have to say, almost all the time, if it's a U.S. definite recession, we've sort of slid into it too. The thing is by degree. Do we slide in further or are we just skirting it? And so I think the 90-91 period is one where all the signs would have said we should have been, you know, if the U.S. was dropping and it was in recession, we would drop farther. But we sort of skirted on top, because this one was did not hit the manufacturing sector as heavily as the 2000-2001. And at that time, our population growth was doing fairly well. And part of that was the defense drop in spending that really hit California, and we had a lot of people moving up here. We're in between these in the sense of population growth right now. Our population growth is better than it was. It was really big, 0.9% at one point in 2001, 2002. And now we're about 1.5%, where we were about 2% to 2.2% in the early 90s. So, I'm guessing that with that kind of situation, and given that we're not really seeing a true manufacturing-led downturn here, and this isn't a true, what I would call, investment income decline that's happening so far, that we're going to look more like that 90-91 period.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And we've had a lot of discussion in at least the House Revenue Committee about some of the target industries that Oregon has identified as the jobs of the future, specifically energy jobs, such as solar. We had a big presentation from Solar World earlier this week. Did you want to say anything about your jobs projections? Because you seem to be saying that it would be a milder downturn here, so this strategy, it seems like, is still a sound one to the extent that energy is driving a lot of the national economic picture.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, yes, and you know, I want to keep in mind that when you have downturns in the economy, they are definitely the exceptions. It's not the norm. The norm is expansion periods, and so as you have your targeted industries, as you do public investments into these industries, those are things that should always go forward. It's tougher, when you're having things like possible revenue drops and so on to do these. But yes, we take those into account into our forecast. And part of what helps us in that, sometimes the data doesn't always show it, but through our Governor's Council of Economic Advisors, these are people that are seeing what's happening out on the street, and they then advise us and say, look, I think in these particular sectors, you ought to maybe bump up the job growth in this because this is what I'm seeing on the street.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Kennedy.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the House and Senate Revenue and Finance Committees. For the record, Michael Kennedy, Senior Economist with the Office of Economic Analysis. To say right off the bat, there are some fairly sizable revisions to the revenue forecast in the negative direction, so I want to go into sort of some details to sort of motivate or provide motivation for why we made these revisions above and beyond just the general indications you heard regarding the economy. I'll start off with corporate income tax. About the big picture here is sizable refunds in the last few months, more so than expected, and I'm going to talk about this more in a second. For the past, say, 2 years now, we've talked about corporate income tax being in flux with all the changes with the 2005 kicker, but then primarily the 100% sales apportionment formula going into effect, and we've said, okay, we're on this side of these sort of changes to the system, and when we get to the other side, we'll know better what the impact of that was and what life's going to look like going forward, what's going to be sort of the average capacity, corporate income tax capacity, and then obviously we also said it should be less volatile when we get to that side. I want to step back a second and sort of remind everybody sort of how corporate income tax transactions take place related to a given tax year. I don't have my pointer, but this is a representative corporate tax year. If you call it the representative year, it starts in year zero. And then the following 2 years basically contain the majority of all the transactions that take place regarding that tax year. So what you see is the dark bars are the quarterly estimated or advanced payments that the corporations make during their tax year. The small green bars are the payments they make with their tax returns. Most corporations don't make payments. They tend to pay considerably more than they owe. And then the red bars are the refunds. And as you can see, the eighth quarter following the start of a tax year contains These bars are actually a percent of overall tax liability. So that's saying that they're roughly a third of what corporations that want to tax year go back out as refunds in that eighth quarter from the start of the tax year. Now translate this to 2006, the year in question. That quarter happens to be the one just finished up, fourth quarter of 2007. So, you know, for those 2 years, we basically pointed at that quarter as being sort of the potential for the, you know, quasi-April surprise regarding corporate income tax. And in fact, that $40 million basically represents such a surprise. So going forward, what does this mean? We basically revised down considerably our 2006 corporate income tax liability estimate. There's still some transactions left to go, but we've pretty much got them all in. Got a better picture of basically what 2006 looks like, and you can see here that the drop is roughly $30 million or more. And it basically constitutes a level shift. Ignore everything else you think about the economy. You know, 2006 was the base year upon which we then said, okay, our expected growth would, you know, progress from. So this basically just shifts down that base and says, okay, here's the new world, the new 100% apportionment world, and it starts in 2006, and that tax liability was X. Okay. Now pointing out going forward that even the December forecast, if you look, had a slight decline for 2007, and then a more considerable decline for 2008. So this is basically reinforces what Tom was talking about, that we've had, particularly in this forecast, built in some amount of decline in corporate taxation, which we felt would have to come from what was going on in construction, what was going on in finance, you name it across the board, what we were seeing. So the whole story is here for corporate income tax, at least, is that just what we've done is sort of rebased the model to an actual number for 2006, but we haven't really changed the scenario because for our corporate income taxes, we already had built in a significant decline related to what we were seeing in the economy. The last thing I want to talk about is sort of 2007, what's the latest data we have. If you saw that there was a decline in liability for 2007, what we know is that payments through the first 12 months are down about 9.7%. And this then shows the red bars are the percent change, 06 to 07, quarterly payments. And then the blue bars are the magnitude, the representative share of the 07 payments. So you can see, yeah, construction jumped 40% year over year. Construction amounts to 5% of the total. On the other hand, what we're talking about today, the issues we have, you see... retail trade down significantly, and that's a fairly sizable industry, so that feeds into what we're seeing is literally coincides with everything that's being talked about in terms of what type of recession this will be. More to the point here for the housing markets, you see FIRE, which is finance, insurance, and real estate, down 20%, and that's a sizable share of the total of the taxable income, tax base. So you're really seeing there in the data what we're talking about more broadly for the economy. And then when we get to the total forecast, the general fund forecast, you'll see the impact of these issues on the forecast. The other issue here I want to point out is that actually, until a few days ago, personal income tax was tracking quite nicely. There was nothing in the data sort of that would give you any indication that anything untoward different than the December forecast assumptions was going on. There's some issues with some weakness in withholding, but there's a technical issue behind that. Really nothing here to get too worried about, so that you'll see that there's a significant revision to personal income tax, but it really is a function of the change in the economic forecast. And you'll see here the majority of the change was just a considerably weaker forecast for tax liability growth in 2008, down to 2.7. And you'll see that pales in comparison to what average growth rates are, what we've been experiencing. Really, to make an analogy, you look at 2003 was a pretty weak year for Oregon. You know, we were still had declining jobs halfway through and sort of limped out of 2003, and that sort of a similar scenario to what you look at the aggregate economic statistics are. So that's sort of the comparison I make. Those really are the two issues. Just to get right to the numbers, we've revised personal income tax down from December by $153 million. The corporate income tax revision is down 62.7 to 853 million. Other revenues are actually up. We're seeing inheritance tax come in above projections, and interest earnings, which is interesting because we mailed out $1 billion in tax. We're sort of researching into that, but it just appears more on the investment side, behavior by Treasury. So there's actually some positive in there. When you sum all that up, general fund revenues are down $170 million to $14 billion. A little issue with the kicker: when they summed up the actual kicker refunds versus the surplus, it was actually $13 million higher. That's the issue that we have to estimate what the liability is to get the percentage. We were just slightly off with that estimate, so the actual number is $13 million higher. So the total decline in GF revenues is 183.1. We now have an official beginning balance now that expenditures are finished through December 07, so there were some slightly more than expected reversions in there, and there are some issues where you decreased the expenditure, the appropriations for 05-07, but then increased it by $2 million down in 07-09. So those cancel each other out. So when all is said and done, the beginning balance has dropped from $206.6 million to $28.8 million. I'm waiting for any questions.
Thank you.
Shock. Oh, ending balance.
Yes. Questions?
Changing the ending balance. Thank you very much.
Changing the ending balance. Yes. That was what I understood. Well, while others are digesting, let me ask one that occurred to me earlier. Toward the beginning of your presentation, you talked about the corporate income tax and changes that resulted from the fact that we went from a split apportionment to 100% sales apportionment for the purpose of determining taxes of corporations that operate in more than one state. Are there other factors that led to your decline in your estimate, and if so, could you describe what those are?
Mr. Chair, I mean, that's solely the cause for the revision. So this is just saying that 2006 we had what in there was a quasi-estimate forecast given the lack of, say, data on refunds in particular, and just having revised that down. You know, we did have impacts in there for apportionment. The issue with that is sort of, well, your underlying forecast for liability, one, there's error there, but there's also the true impact of the apportionment depends upon what liability looks like in terms of who's earning all the money in 06, not the year you used as your representative year. So you can have a greater impact or a lesser impact just depending on who's making the money and who isn't.
Thank you. So when you're talking about that particular projection versus the actuals, that's the primary factor as you see it now.
See, sure, that's the
difference between what we expected the apportionment change to be and what it actually was.
Mr. Chair, it's two things. It might be that, and it might just be that the underlying base estimate for liability was wrong. I mean, there's a whole sorts of issues, and it will be another year or so before Department of Revenue can look and do analysis on the tax returns themselves and say, hey, here was what the impact was. Here was what liability would have been otherwise. And we can then share out and say, okay, part of it was this, part of it was that.
Thank you. Someone down here? I thought I saw a hand. I don't. Thank you very much. Any other questions?
There's more.
Please, go ahead. Yes, there is. Several more pages. Thank you.
Now, having sort of been through this before, I know there's a natural tendency to say, okay, you dropped it $170 million this time. How much are you going to drop it next time?
Nobody wanted to ask that.
Anticipate sort of this notion of what we might see from here on out. And so what we've done here is sort of looked at all of the past biennia for which we have these data and looked at what the change from close of session to this March forecast mid-biennia was, and then say, okay, now how did things pan out from this forecast going forward? Now, just here is where we are today. This is a 0.5% decrease in the revenue picture. Okay. There are a couple obvious standouts here where we had severe recessions and had only really halfway or so sort of built in what the effect of that recession would be by this March. Coincidentally, both those recessions started on or about the May forecast. So it was sort of the reason why the error was so large. Obviously, this time we're sort of looking at a forecast that may or may not be starting now or sometime here in the near future. So in the middle of buying, the potential for the impact is less. But I also point to then a number of other instances where, in particular here, a 0.3% decline, then coming out of it, ended up the biennial positive. So there are instances where, you know, from at least a revenue standpoint, if not an economic standpoint, where we have seen declining revenues, a reason to decline the forecast, but not had anything like a decline in revenues overall relative to the budget, let's say. As a matter of fact, there's many more of those than there are the severe ones. So I would say certainly there is plenty of hope that when we call this forecast the baseline forecast, that in fact when we finish up that we could just as well end up a few hundred million above the forecast as a few hundred million below the forecast. And obviously those scenarios are dependent upon a severe worsening of the outlook and the actual economic picture versus what we have in here. The upside would be, hey, there isn't a recession, and we actually race off, beginning halfway through this year. So those are the sort of either side scenarios, high side and low side, which I basically just outlined there. I do want to talk one more issue about this upcoming forecast in June. And as I just said, the potential deviation, if we look at historical deviations from this forecast to the end, you're looking at maybe 400 either way, depending upon bullet one, sort of how things pan out. I also heard that, we'll know a whole lot more in June, which is true because there's a lot of information that comes in between now and June in terms of sort of the tax filing season, but then two quarterly payments on the part of estimated payments on the part of individual filers, two quarterly payments on the part of corporate filers. So a lot of information, like real time, about now where we are today. The one thing I want to talk about here is the potential for the quote-unquote April surprise, harking back to 2002, related to the 2001 tax year. We got to April, I remember this distinctly, and midway through April I called the Department of Revenue and asked why they stopped processing payments. And they said, well, they don't stop processing, they're gone, they're done. There's no more money coming in. And that was when we sort of started looking at this relationship between when things start slowing down and then what subsequently does April look like in terms of revenues versus final payments. So what we have here in the blue is actually the share of that total activity, refunds and final payments, the absolute value of that, the share of that that's made up for by checks versus refunds. And in normal years, roughly refunds cancel out payments. They equally each other out over the next 6 months. And basically what the state keeps is the sum total of withholding and estimated payments. That's normal years. And obviously you can see what happened related to tax year 2001. Refunds accounted for closer to 63%, and payments accounted for only 37%, and that was a surprise. It wiped out about $250 million right there just from that phenomenon relative to the forecast. So the whole issue I want to point out is sort of this notion that we could be due for an April surprise here, and say, how was 2001 different from where we are today? In 2001, when we were creating, say, the March forecast for 2001-2003, we can look back at 2001 and say, well, withholding was 1% over the prior year, 2000, and estimated payments were down 10.6%. What that means is there are indications there that things were slowing, and the fact of the matter is that taxpayers just don't fully adjust during the tax year to that slowing in their estimated payments and their withholding, and there's further adjustment that needs to be made. Now, what do we know for 2007? Once you adjust for the withholding table change in 2007, we're basically looking at anywhere from 6.5% to 7.5%. Reminder that the Department of Revenue changed withholding tables in 2007, effectively lowered the amount withheld from checks for a given income level. We have that built into our model. There's about $280 million that should have come in withholding but didn't. So here in the next few months, there's going to be some surprised taxpayers who find out they either aren't getting that refund that they get every year or have to pay. That is already built into our model. I think the other issue here is you look at estimated payments, up 17.3% for the year. So 2007 doesn't have the kind of characteristics that you expect to see from a tax year that was slowing significantly below what you had in the forecast. So that's why, just as you can see, we have sort of a correction there, decline in that final payment ratio, and that's associated with slowing growth in tax liability. But as you see historically, that is they're both consistent with the pattern of how things work out historically. Starting to allay fears. The impact going forward, general fund revenues for 2009-11 are down $142 million, something along that line. The issue here is that while we have a recession impacting the economy and impacting taxes, we also expect that when we come out of that recession, we'll accelerate, we'll have a year, like a rebound year, of significantly higher growth, and we'll return to that long-term path that we basically have been hovering around, for better or for worse, for 25 years. Here are the growth rates. You can see that the structural growth rate has dropped to 8.5%. We were getting close to 10% in the September and December forecasts. And then next year, we expect, or next biennium, we expect 12.2%, and then sort of a stronger year in 2011-2013. That's general fund revenues. Also have not terrible news for lottery. Looking at the December forecast and how it compares to actual sales, you can see here that most of the weeks are negative. You can see the two sizable upside weeks, $1 million a week collected above the forecast. You'll notice that's 12/15 and 12/22. The kicker was distributed on 12/10.
It's all wrapped up in a burger. We've learned where some of it.
That is not what I wanted to hear.
So representing a burger, if that represents about 2.5 to 3 million versus what it would have been had it not been out of a $1 billion kicker, you might just take something from that.
It's not as big.
It's a low.
Yeah.
It could be worse than that, I guess is what I'm saying. The impact of that, the last time we met, sales were down relative to the forecast, but we talked about two relative issues there. There was consumer spending slowing, but there was also unseasonably warm weather leading up to that forecast. And, the issue there was how much of which was impact. I think what this tells us is all consumer spending. And so we fully revised in accordance with the national forecast firm's revision down in consumption, built all of this in, and the hit then is $21.5 million in lower earnings from video lottery sales. Lottery did transfer $3.9 million in administrative savings, so the total resource hit is $17.5. I think most importantly here is the projected ending balance is $25.8 million, down from $36.6. And then the standard. And the hits, once again, it's sort of, we try to resist, you know, sort of jerking the outer year forecast around based upon near-term fluctuations. So we sort of have what we think is in mind is that long-term sort of level of trend level, and then try to keep that target alone while making adjustments for what's going on today. So you can see there are hits to this biennium, a slightly smaller hit to the next biennium, and then almost no hit to 11-13. And then here's the distribution of those funds.
Very good. Thank you. Senator Monroe.
Thank you very much. I'm kind of concerned about the long-term prognosis. I looked at the president's proposed budget. I see that they're borrowing another $150 billion for a stimulus package, and they'll be selling bonds to pay for that, mostly to China and to other countries. I note that the president wants to make the tax cuts permanent, again, increasing deficits, increase spending on military, again, with borrowed monies. That the fact that we are deficit spending big time at record rates, and that most of our bonds are being sold overseas, has caused the dollar to drop continuously versus other currencies. I understand that the dollar dropping versus other currencies actually helps Oregon because we're an export-driven state in the short term, but I worry about what things are going to be like for my grandson if these trends continue. I just wondered if you have any comments on the long-term results of this fiscal insanity.
While they're thinking about that, let me just make certain that I understand. Senator, when you say we, what you really mean is the United States government. The state of Oregon, of course, runs a balanced budget, and we do not run a deficit.
I absolutely fully understand that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. But I wanted to make sure our internet audience and those on the cable television understood that when you said we, you meant the United States government, not the state of Oregon.
Yes.
Thank you. Gentlemen, your answer to the question.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, economists believe that during economic downturns, this is an appropriate time to run federal deficits to help out. Likewise, though, they believe when you have expansion periods, that's when you should be socking the money away and running surpluses. And there is a danger when you don't do that during the good times and you even spend more. We worry about interest rates generally being higher than they would normally be because there's this, they're competing with everybody else to sell government bonds. I'm less worried about the dollar, actually. But for your grandchildren, worry about Medicare, Medicaid, worry about Social Security. Those are the items that are, I think, the U.S. government really has to address going forward. And to the extent that they keep running deficits, it's much tougher to fill holes later on when you're budgetarily constrained because of the position you put yourself in.
Just a brief follow-up. What would happen if, in fact, our trading partners, China is the biggest one, decided to not purchase any more U.S. bonds and in fact decided to sell or unload some of those bonds?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, the interesting part, the analogy, this was given by David Weiss from Standard & Poor's. He says, you know, the U.S. at times sort of keeps spending like a drunken sailor. And his codependent girlfriends, China and Japan, support him in this activity. And so you almost have kind of a codependency going on here. It is not in China's interest at all to have the U.S. economy be weak. And so given this interconnection, I just don't see that as a scenario. It would be nuts for them to do that all at once. Now, there are signs that there is concern that their portfolio is too heavily engaged in U.S. dollar-denominated assets, and they want to diversify a little bit. But they are smart enough to know they have to do this slowly over time to not cause great disruptions. So given the ebb and flow of trade here, I just, you know, can't imagine that they would actually do this.
But, Mr. Chair, the decline in the dollar means that the value of those assets, those bonds that they're purchasing, is less. And you know, because those are purchased in dollars. And it just strikes me that at some point, some tight-fisted economic leader in some of those countries may say, enough.
Mr. Chair, Senator Monroe, let me give you an analogy to the stock market. Everyone at once decides, I don't think the stock market's good, I'm going to get out of it. If they all get out at the same time, they all lose. So I think in China's position here, to all of a sudden just say that the dollar value has gone down and want to get out of this, that's not in their best interest. So you have places, for example, China's central bank going out and buying up U.S. dollars because that helps support the dollar's value. And does that mean that there's too many Japanese yen out there and Japan's going to have inflation? They'd love to have a little inflation. So this activity, I don't think, is going to end anytime soon. I think the
in some respects, we might go a little
too far afield here. But you know, the best ambassador program that the United States has is being involved in international trade with other countries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. It's a little bit like when you owe the bank $100, you're in, and you can't pay it, you're in trouble. But if you owe the bank $1 billion, all of a sudden the bank's in trouble, not you. Thank you. Other questions? Yes, Representative Byrne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, I think comparing our spending addiction to a drunken sailor is an insult to drunken sailors everywhere. But
again, the reference is the United States government.
How about an insult to girlfriend? Given the gender balance of our chairs here,
I wanted to ask you a question, and I don't want to put you on the spot. If you want to answer this, I fully accept that. I am worried about we're talking about long term. I'm worried about the short term, and I'm worried about bridging the short term into the long term. I'm more optimistic about the long term, obviously, than around the short term. Once again, it's the point that by the time we get the economic data that proves without a question of a doubt that we're in a recession or that things are bad, we're already so far into it that a big part of the damage is done. And so my question to you is, even if we don't technically go into recession, there's going to be Oregonians laid off from jobs, there's going to be a decrease in our ability to put kids to college, everything we want to do. Does it make sense for the state to be considering, in light of what we know, and either we're pro or against this fiscal stimulus, is it appropriate for the state to be thinking of its own sort of short-term, finite fiscal stimulus package? And if it is, what should we be looking at? What things should we be taking into consideration? Representative Berger's question about the kicker was a great one. I'm thinking something other than that. Is there anything we should be considering?
Mr. Chair, Representative Broome, that's a very difficult question to answer. You know, for example, I would say, you know, our forecast is one that's coming out and telling you, look, you have to recognize that we have to see what the tea leaves are. We believe that there's further slowing happening. And that is a forecast, and we reflect that. And we know that our tax revenues are very elastic because of our income tax base. And so that even a small drop in economic activity can have a multiplied effect on our revenues coming in. So, but for us, I don't know if we're really in a position to be able to advise you further along than that. What I mean is that your legislative revenue office, your legislative fiscal office, takes our information and then can make these prescriptive ideas of what to go forward. But I think the way that you're thinking is exactly right. You know, to investigate what is it that possibly can do at a state level. And there are some difficulties with that. And a lot of these things are international in scope to try to be able to do something about. And then also what to do on the fiscal side in terms of budgetary needs.
Thank you. One of the points, of course, is that we are considering a number of stimulative packages in this committee for coming year. One of them is the affordable housing tax credit increase that would allow us to continue operating 1,800 units of affordable housing that otherwise would go off of the market. We are also considering tax credits in the business energy tax credit area that have the potential of moving some large manufacturers into Oregon. Mm-hmm. That will have the effect, hopefully, of building a cluster in that area. Now, one of the other questions that we had this morning already raised that as an issue, and there are several others, of course. The highway fund expenditures that we're making this year will be stimulative. These are things that previous legislators adopted, and of course, in the last session, we adopted a number of issues that will allow for construction at universities, and we're considering one very large one that will go into my neighborhood if it's approved, that will be very stimulative in the short run in the construction process. So the legislature is, of course, on track on those kinds of issues. My question is a slightly different one, and I want to bring us down into areas that I think maybe you can deal with. We got news late last night that the federal government, the Congress has passed a stimulation package increasing the federal debt up to $160 billion, larger round numbers, that would include at least two components that I know about. One of them is a rebate to individual taxpayers based on their income and their family structure. And the other one is a change in the depreciation schedule for business. Do you have an understanding now of what the effect of those changes would be on Oregon's economy and more specifically on our tax receipts? I know it only happened last night, so the answer might very well be no, but if you have an impression about what that effect would be and whether or not you factored it into this projection, I think that would be useful to hear.
Mr. Chair, the impacts that we do have come directly from HealthSA. And what I'd...
So I should direct the question this way, huh?
I was trying to be tactful.
the specific question, I guess, then, is have you factored the potential changes in the federal tax law into our consideration of revenue here based on our current law or not? And I think that's a yes or no.
Mr. Chair, no. Not those specific. Because it really then... it comes down to what is the response.
Thank you.
Do we decouple? Do we exclude from taxes, et cetera, et cetera?
So if Paul gives us a projection that tells us this is a plus or a minus and how much, we should add or subtract that number from the numbers that you've given us in our calculations.
That's true, yes.
Thank you.
Until the next forecast, if they were to become official estimates, then we fold them.
Right. Well, the president's promised he's going to sign it next week, so one assumes he will. Other questions, comments? Senator Morris.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's a little troubling thinking back to your deviation slide, a $400 million deviation when mm-hmm. the change in your general fund, lottery fund forecast is already at $188.6 million. Leaving an ending fund balance, combined discretionary funds, $54.6 million. And then overlaying that with a $400 million historical deviation would suggest that this session ought not to be too excited about spending more money. And I'm not expecting a response. That's our business. But it just gives me a lot of concern.
Thank you. Yeah, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And this kind of plays off of Senator Morris's question, concern about the potential of a $400 million deviation. Could you just summarize very succinctly what, you know, we've been through two major recessions in the last 20 years, the 1991 and the 2001 recession. And you made a bunch of points about why we are more like 91, which we basically kind of floated above the national trends and did not do worse than the national trends. Can you just sum it up, why you think that we are more like 91 now instead of 2002, 2003, which most of us here on this podium still have nightmares about?
Mr. Chair, Senator Riddick, from a tax standpoint in particular, I think it comes down to being whether the recession is consumption side driven or whether it's investment side driven. And you look at how Oregon is poised, we tax investment income. And we tax corporate income from the sale of investment goods, which is most particularly what happened in 2001, why corporate income tax liability dropped 50% from 2000 to 2001, almost directly related to this drop in business investment spending. And we were very, very focused in our industries here on that. And the other was we tax capital gains, and capital gains dropped from $6 billion to $3 billion in 1 year. These were things we were very exposed to changes in, and they hit us very hard in the bottom line, tax receipts line. Now, move to the other side on consumption. We don't have sales tax. I liken this to, what's going on out there. There's plenty of people that have jobs, and they're just not spending all their income now. Their savings rate's going up, their consumption's going down, and if you had a sales tax, you're going to see that immediately, and you're going to start taking in less receipts. But if you still earn that same amount of money, we're still going to tax you, here, and we're still going to get the money in. So, we're not, to a consumption, very consumption-driven, cycle like this one, we're less exposed to the fluctuations. Yes, there was an asset bubble, it was in housing. We don't really tax, directly that the gain from housing. So all the way along the line, you look where we're positioned today, we haven't realized undue gains, from, speculative bubble and or like the high-tech boom, so that we're not poised to see the kind of erosion of that taxable income. We're going to see it, but it's going to be, we're going to get less wage and salary taxed in retail from restaurants, etc. Where the point of sale, those people that are working there, they earn less, we get less. But at the high end, those people who, you're going to have to look at the stock market, say, collapsing, which we really don't have much of an expectation of. So that's kind of why, from a tax standpoint, really different situations that we're in.
So, Mr. Chair, to follow up, so basically what you're saying is that you don't expect to see a dramatic drop-off in capital gains.
Mr. Chair, Senator Burke, we do have a decline, obviously, because of just where we had risen to. We had, over 20% gains for four straight years, so obviously that can't continue. But on the other hand, there's nothing going on in the stock market that would lead us to believe that there's going to be a serious collapse in the activity. It's the behavior that you're looking at. It's the sale of these stocks. And matter of fact, with the volatility that's going on, people are selling, people are buying, that generates gains.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Others?
Representative
Rosenbaum.
Thank you, and I appreciate the last two comments. I think those points are well taken. I think it really does need to be said, though, that Oregon has not in any way behaved like a drunken sailor, whether male or female, and that we have made sound investments, particularly recently in education and things that I think will benefit us very well as having really funded our rainy day fund. And those were things we did quite consciously because we understood that we were in uncertain times and that average Oregonians would benefit from those kinds of sound decisions. So I just want to say for the record that I think we're on a good course. I don't think that there's any reason for panic in what we've heard today, and I feel quite confident that I'm right about that.
Thank you, Representative Senator Burke.
If I can just add to that, I think I'm very reassured that we are sitting here for this forecast rather than not being in session, because there are things in this forecast that we will have to take into account and make adjustments. And I'm very glad that this is really a good example of why the special session is a good idea, why the supplemental session is a good idea.
Thank you. Let me simply add to that too, is that while this forecast is not as positive as certainly we would like, it still shows us with a positive ending fund balance, and I think that speaks well to the prudence of the 07 session in establishing a significant ending fund balance to account for exactly this kind of situation that we saw as a possibility back then. We would much rather it were not becoming real, but the fact that it is becoming real, we still have a positive ending balance in our budget, and I think that speaks very well of the way the Ways and Means process and the legislature as a whole handled the budget last year. Thank you very much. And unless there's something else, the House Committee on Revenue will stand adjourned until Monday, and I think the Senate's meeting later today.
The Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue will adjourn until 3:30 this afternoon.